And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio. Under a Shady Tree with Reverend Terry Power and Robin McKean. Come on in. Grab a glass of sweet iced tea and sit right down. These two mountain witches are about to start their talk.
Take turns
go back and forth, however you want to handle this. Tell us a little bit about yourselves, about each of you, about the coven. And
We're traditional Gardnerian witches. We perpetuate the ancient ways of paganism and magic, witchcraft. We're open public witches, we're activists. So we practice magic daily throughout the day, and we teach people how to do that as well to better their lives and the planet.
We've published one book so far, which is a big bestseller for the last 10 years. It's gone into a second edition. It's called The Goodly Spellbook, Old Spells for Modern Problems. And we're just about to sign the contract on two new ones that are going to be coming out, one called Rituals and Sabbats and the other Candle Magic. And we've got a enormous website that I've been keeping up since, I think, 1996 called oldenwild.org or wiccans.org or oldenworks.org. All three names lead to the same place.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, our publisher, Barnes & Noble, well, it's a big one of those elite New York Park Avenue publishers. They wanted us to do two huge books every year, a whole series. And so that's what we're doing. We're involved in that right now. We also have a huge prison ministry nationwide, I mean, including Alaska, Hawaii, the whole Puerto Rico, the whole works. And it could be men on death row. It could be juveniles. It could be people that were institutionalized. We help them acquire their rights and exercise their rights, religious freedoms and things like that.
And we also counsel them because, you know, let's face it, when you're stuck in prison, that's a really good place to consider your religion, your conscience, your morality and ethics and so forth. So we get a lot of questions about, you know, what gods should we worship? How do we, you know, do ritual and so forth? And what kind of magic can we practice here in this really stark place?
Interesting. So I've been doing that since 1995, and you know, there's a huge prison map shows where we're at every day.
I think we crossed 400.
Yes, I just broke 400, and that's just since 2000.
400 institutions, yeah.
Specific institutions.
Okay. Well, Lady Passion, why don't we start with you and tell us your background. How did you, where did you start? How did you come to this? Take a few minutes and let us know who
sure.
you are.
Sure. It's a neat story. I was arrested from my father's arms at gunpoint by the state of Texas. And my mother had abandoned me and my siblings, five of us in total, and hopped a bus for San Diego during, you know, the flower power time. And so myself and my sister, one of my sisters, were adopted into a fundamentalist Christian family, and they were beaters, and they were hateful, and they were sexist, and they were racist, and all kinds of stuff that I never took to, I never understood, and I didn't fare well with them. And so, but anyway, at 13, I just knew what I was. I was born psychic. After a while, I tried to suppress it because, you know, people don't like it when you scan their minds and stuff. But at 13, I said, that's enough. And I declared publicly. And I've been a public witch ever since. I've done a lot of things with my magic. I've nurtured a Hispanic community. Sewing up their wounds and helping them with magic and all that stuff in exchange for, you know, literally chickens and eggs. I did that for a good 20 years. And then I decided I couldn't work any more magic alone because I'd done every spell I knew. And so I wanted to start reaching out and trying to learn more from working with others. So I moved lock, stock, and barrel from Texas to North Carolina here in the mountains of Asheville. And I eventually got legitimate traditional training. That's when I met Dieve at a national witch gathering. And Yeah, we've really worked it hard. We've saved trees, parks, and old buildings, and you know we've really we've eliminated an anti-divination law, and I've won a big lawsuit against the largest corporate owner of nursing homes. You know, I changed public health law here in North Carolina and set national precedent. And we've just done a lot of stuff, and it just shows to go, yeah, you know, if you're a witch, there's so many things that you can do, and all you have to do is look in your own backyard. You don't have to go to Africa to be good, you know what I mean? And so that's what we do. We live it, we teach it, we model it, and that's what I do.
Okay.
Well, I'll take a crack at it. I came from the other end of the American spectrum, so to speak. I grew up on the San Francisco Bay Area. My dad was a engineer for Hewlett-Packard. You know, my mom, her father had been involved in Huna, which is a Hawaiian-based tradition. He communicated with spirits. I inherited his spirit pendulum for, you know, talking to spirits with. I grew up in that very secular, very scientific oriented background. When I went to college at Princeton and to study music, specifically music theory, I wanted to find out how music worked. And I wanted to be a composer, you know. So I was deep into Renaissance music. I'd, you know, been an early member of the Society for Creative Anachronism. I, you know, spent my summers at the Renaissance Fair working there. And so sooner or later, of course, I discovered that when you study early music, you also study magic. It's just simple as that. They connected it with astrology. They connected it with sacred geometry, numerology. And so when I left Princeton, I actually became a professional astrologer back in the Bay Area. And eventually I got a little tired of the, Princeton taught me, they had a motto, Princeton and the Nation's Service. Like, you don't just sit back and snipe at things. You actually get involved and try to change things for the better. And, you know, I ran into a lot of New Agers in California who just wanted to create their own reality and blame everybody else for their problems. And I knew that wasn't right. So when I fell in with some witches in Berkeley who said, "No, you take an active role in changing the world. You take an active role in applying spirituality, and that's what witchcraft is, applied spirituality." So they were California Line Gardenarians, and I got an initiation with them. As Lady Passion said, you know, we met at a national witch gathering here in Black Mountain that I attended with.
Actually, it was Lake Lure.
Lake Lure, yeah, but Black Mountain sounds cool too. You know, it's kind of, they were both kind of witchy.
Lake,
yeah.
Lure, that's where we met.
But yeah, so we, you know, and I had really kind of realized from the astrological work that I was doing that the, long story short, religion was the rising power, and I didn't want to see it be this really toxic religion that passed as fundamentalist Christianity and so forth. So when I had a chance to, I went to the South to see what I could do, and that's where I met this incredible Southern witch who just radiated compassion and power both. And how
true,
could I not get together with her?
It's true, though.
So, so we got together and founded Coven Old and Wild and right in Billy Graham's backyard. Well,
in
not Franklin Graham's, I guess. 1994, and we did a big public ritual right in the middle of downtown Asheville, which got covered on national TV and kind of helped break things open here. And we take a little bit of credit, at least on the spiritual side, for making Asheville the little bubble of tolerance that it is in a very very conservative area of the Southeast. So that's that's pretty much the short story. And like I say, you know, we're activists as well as priestesses, so we consider them both to be important.
All right, fair enough. So what each of you, I guess, ended up in Asheville area in different ways, but was there something particular that drew each of you to that area?
Yes, I cast a spell because I knew that I needed to work with other people. My magic was working great. There was no problem. It's just I felt an inner calling to expand my abilities, and I knew that I couldn't do it on my own because I had gone as far as I could go as a solitary witch, which means a witch that practices alone. And so I sensed it, so I cast a spell to say, God, please tell me where I need to go. Please tell me where I need to be, how I can help where I get and not just leech off of it, but that can also nurture me, will accept me. And they said Asheville. So break out the map, come to find out. There are a ton of Asheville spelled differently all over the nation. And I'm like, I don't even know where to start. I mean, what do I do? You know, do I just, you know, put this up and throw a dart at it or what? So I prayed on it a little bit more, and it just kept coming back, Asheville, North Carolina. It had the right rainfall. It had the right mix of, you know, southern comfort, you know, no stress. And it just had a lot of possibilities. So I decided to treat myself for my 30th birthday. I came up here alone. I tooled around in a red convertible, and I really liked the vibe. But it still had a lot of room to grow. And I'm like, well, I smell witches here. I smell ancient magic here. And in fact, these are the oldest mountains on the entire planet. So, yeah, I just said, this is it. I'm going to, you know, throw caution to the wind and come. And, you know, we'll see what happens. And it worked. It really totally worked. So mine was from a spell.
Okay. What about you, DFA?
He came because of me.
Yeah, that's pretty true, yeah.
That's totally true.
Yeah. I really fell in love with the area, though, and I can tell you why. I mean, kind of a story that has to do with shady trees. We have about 9 years ago now, in 2008, we found out that a developer was going to raise a beautiful old magnolia tree. It had been there for nearly 100 years.
Hmm? Two of them, they're intertwined, remember?
Yeah, two of them, right. In front of the our city hall, our historic city hall. And, you know, he's going to put up a giant condo that would only be available to rich people right at the verge of the public park, you know. So we'd all be looking down and sneering at everybody and telling him to, you know, quiet down all day. So we just decided we're not going to stand for this. And so we announced that we were doing a public protest ritual around the tree. And we did. We did a spell from our spell book to protect the tree. And a lot of people attended to cut right to the chase. The city wouldn't do anything to save this. The county wouldn't do anything to save it, even though they'd illegally sold it, the land, to the developer. It was a huge scandal. But so we just, Lady Passion, just after the last vote to destroy the tree, she just marched right out, parked herself under the tree, and said, I'm not leaving.
I sat my butt down. I said, you can't move me with a steamroller or, you know, anything. And I didn't leave for 3.5
No,
minutes.
She didn't. So because so many people around here care so much about nature, you know, because they're here for that, they're here for the magic of the place and for the history of it, people just flock to sit with us and talk to us and sign our petitions and help out and do everything they could to save the tree. The developer was freaking out, you know. He couldn't kick us off without causing a huge scandal. He couldn't do anything. We finally ended up, you know, kind of connecting with him when we found out all he really wanted was his money back. And to make a long and very interesting story short, we talked them into turning the historic building that was also on the property into a people's pub.
Make up for his rudeness with the people. I mean, people came as far away as from New Zealand to see the witch who tied herself to the tree. Well, I never tied myself, but I was tethered in a spiritual way.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he became the town villain. He was actually voted the town villain. And we also, in addition to saving the trees and the old 1800s building beside him, saved a haunted jail beneath the trees. And so, I mean, it was just a win-win-win for everybody.
And we did this by integrating magic and activism. We didn't just cast a spell. We didn't just attend public meetings. We did both. And you know,
and
because
how I
we,
did it, how I really did it, is I made like an outdoor parlor underneath the trees. The shade canopy of the trees. Every single day, several times a day, I would arrange folding chairs, you know, camping top chairs, comfy ones, in a semicircle right in front. And people brought, you know, groups of school kids, tour buses dropped off people, and we did impromptu spells. Clowns came, knitters came, masseuses came to offer people free massages. You know, it was just a free-for-all. Native Americans came. You know, everybody had a reason for wanting to be there, and they attached to it. It was a symbolic thing, but it was also a real thing. And, I mean, every day, hundreds and hundreds of lawyers had to walk in front of us to get to their office. And they would scream out, if they come and womp your heads and they throw you in the clink, I'll defend you. I'll represent you. You know, I mean, it was amazing. And I didn't have any experience with that. I wasn't raised to be an activist, but magic brings that out in people.
True. So I have a question. Why Gardnerian? Why that particular path? Why did that draw you?
Well, that, you know, a lot of people, the first thing they study is kind of the thing they stick to, and I'll plead a little bit guilty to that. But it was more than that. The particular branch of Gardnerians that I fell in with, California, were deep into researching the books, the Gardnerian Book of Shadows. They discovered, kind of by accident, there were actually multiple versions, that there were a lot of people were cutting things out of their version from this particular line that they didn't like, that actually might have been very ancient, you know. And so the more they were researching it, the more they were finding, wait a minute, this stuff is really old. It really does go way back. And these are people who are, you know, Berkeley University and so forth. So they're pretty intelligent and well-read people. And so as I got involved with that, I started realizing they're right, you know, based on everything I've learned about ancient magic up to this point, studying the Quadrivium and, you know, ancient medieval history and so forth. But this stuff really is old, and you know, so the more I delve into it, the more I mean, it's continued that way. The more I delve into it, the more I find there's things going way back. Just for one example, you know, we in the ritual format that a lot of people use nowadays, maybe, you know, descended from Gardnerianism, that we also, you know, we put a version of in our new book, Rituals and Sabbats, so people will have a ritual script to refer to. When you're calling the four quarters at the very beginning, you know, before you even call the guardians of the quarters, you go around and you light the candles at the four directions. And you say, Echo, Echo, Azarak, the power to know. Echo, Echo, Zomalak, the power to will. Echo, Echo, Gananas, the power to dare. Echo, Echo, Arada, the power to keep silent. So there's these four witch powers that are kind of worked into that. And most people, you know, we just kind of memorize that and we do it, you know, tradition. But, you know, I started to realize, we both did, that Now, wait a minute. There's a little more here. These are described as powers. Now, we talk a lot in, you know, witchcraft about when we talk about ethics and morality, you know, we talk about, oh, should we curse or should we not, you know? Are we going to get threefold return? Are we, you know, or should we harm none? I mean, that's pretty much, I mean, too often I started to feel that's just the sum of our discussion of morality and ethics. And meanwhile, here's, you know, the fundamentalist religions out there just absolutely perverting all discussion of morality and ethics, you know, making it all about, you know, abortion or all about blowing people up, you know. So, you know, I started thinking, well, what have we got? What's in our roots? And as I traced those witch powers back, I realized that they connect directly to the ancient four cardinal virtues, you know, that we've got as pagans. We've got this incredible moral and ethical compass that we've inherited in the form of these four virtues, which are prudence, you know, the virtue that's connected to the power to know, you know, kind of plan for the future. know what you're doing before you jump into it, you know, study, learn, know thyself. You know, the power to will, that connects with justice, who is traditionally represented as bearing not only the, you know, the scales that everybody knows about, you know, the statue of justice, but also a sword, because justice, the ancient pagan philosophers said, has to be willed. You know, you have to will to receive justice and will to give it to others. You know, and then, okay, well, so fortitude, that connected to the power to dare, you know, courage. You got to have courage to be a witch. There's no question about that. And finally, the fourth one was the power to keep silent. And I realized that had to do with the cardinal virtue of temperance, you know, knowing when to restrain yourself, how to keep an ear to the ground and let that ear be, you know, mightier than the tongue. Because sometimes, well, I mean, we counsel, Lady Passion says that she often counsels prisoners to, you know, just hold off on talking. Just try to listen for a while before you stir things up. And then when you're not, you know, when you're not such a chatty Cathy, your words will have more weight. So anyway, we put that in our new book, Rituals and Sabbaths, and we've realized more and more that that's really a key Wiccan and pagan ethical technique. It's not a code. It's not like a, you know, carved on tablets. It's skills for living a moral and ethical life and the pursuit of happiness, which the ancients called eudaimonia, which originally meant as if guided by a goodly spirit. And, you know, through John Locke, that got translated by Thomas Jefferson as the pursuit of happiness in mm-hmm. the Declaration of Independence. So anyway, yeah. I'm a gardenerian.
I just need to clarify something, though, because I know there are people who are listening to this and going, gardenerian is not an ancient path.
Yes,
it is.
The only reason that it's called gardnerianism is because of Gerald Gardner, who publicized it. He went public with it, like I went public.
Yeah, I'm aware of who he is. And
because, yeah, I know you do, but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to, because he was panicking, because the coven that initiated and made him and nurtured him were old and dying out, and he was terrified. That this religion would just vanish. And he just could not, in his conscience, see that happen. And he bucked a lot of other traditional covens that never went public. But he did it because he felt like it was right to do. And I think he's absolutely right. I too, when I came to gardnerianism, I was very suspicious. Because I'm like, I don't want to have to call my path, after a man, I have investigated for decades now, and he didn't make any of this up, and he didn't throw in with anybody else to make it up. I mean, it was old way before him. It's a sad, poor choice to have of a phrase or a name, but it doesn't represent some new, you know, reconstruction. It's not neo-paganism. It's old paganism. His name has just been attached because of his involvement in making it public and stronger.
And that's not to say a lot of people haven't added on. I mean, Doreen Valiente, excuse me, of course, wrote a lot of the rituals. I mean, people are always adding, you know, and contributing their own stuff, like in the Book of Shadows, as we researched it. You know, sure, we found tons of stuff that didn't date back past the 1970s. And unfortunately, people were, you know, a bit irresponsible. They didn't sign their work like we, you know, require that people do nowadays when, if they contribute something to the California Gardnerian Book of Shadows. But the things like the, so much like some of the numerological traditions, some of the, even down to the, you know, assignment of the elements to the quarters goes, you can find that in the Greek magical papyri.
Well, I wouldn't even say that she wrote a lot of the rituals. I would say that she, you know, obviously she confessed to, and it wasn't a secret. She admitted that she, you know, sort of slightly reworked the charge of the goddess, but it's very minimal work on her part. And, I mean, it's all been fully accounted for. And we, the difference between the Bible, say, or the Quran, or whatever, is that witches do attribute their work. They date it. They do put their name on it.
Well, we do now.
That's been for decades now.
Yeah.
It's a requisite. And we're also not supposed to just willy-nilly excise portions just because of...
You know, trad, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to jump in here, guys, but we are at the bottom of the hour, and we need to take a song break and play an ad and do a little bit of business.
And then we'll be back.
And we'll be right back, but we are going
we're going to play
Wendy Rule's song, World Between Worlds. And then we've got an ad and some stuff we got to play, and we'll be back right after this. Everybody, stick around.
That's interesting that you say Wendy Rules, because Wendy was my adopted name.
Savor the sorrow divine. International Pagan Radio, a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week streaming radio station. We have informative Facebook page, interactive Facebook group, absorbing interviews with musicians, engaging shows with excellent hosts, and dynamic interviews with spiritual leaders. Come join us. We have the very best pagan music from around the world. We feature artists such as Dave the Bard, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, Elaine Silver, Izon, Brian Hinkey, Robin Renee, Fawn, and so many more, all available for your listening pleasure 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We are also available on TuneIn Radio, so go to www.internationalpaganradio.com. It's all pagan, all the time.
You're listening to Terry and Robin on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. We're glad you're here. And now, back to the show.
We'll move your agenda. Yeah. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is Reverend Terry Power, and you are under a shady tree with Terry and Robin. How you doing over there, darling?
I'm doing very well.
God, I love Wendy Rule's voice.
Yeah, she's awesome.
That's just, I mean, I remember the first time I interviewed her was back in 2011. And I saw her at a concert, and just such a powerful voice. It's always great hearing her voice. So, anyway, we are joined tonight by Lady Passion and Diave with Coven Oldenwild, and we were talking before the break about their gardnerian roots, and I'm going to bring them back in here. So, there we go, guys. Are you back?
Yes, I'd just like to say it's interesting that you picked that song because Wendy was my adoptive original name.
Oh.
Interesting.
That was
honestly picked the song because I like Wendy Rule's voice. But
See, that's what we can do. We find connections in things.
Well, there we are.
And, that's one thing we really appreciate is great pagan music. We always try to integrate that into our public rituals, you know, get people dancing and moving to it. And that's,
absolutely.
Yeah. I know people tend to hear Gardnerian and they think, oh, you guys are claiming we're better than everybody else. But that, I really hope I didn't. That's not the impression I'm trying to leave here.
The impression that I think
no,
you're giving.
No, not at all.
But
oh, good.
What I,
okay.
What I am,
good.
What I am deeply, what I will tell you is what I am deeply questioning is the link. I would love to be more educated about how it is that you have links about Gerald Gardner having an ancient.
I'll tell you.
Tradition.
Ancient lineage,
because that goes against everything I have ever looked at, everything I have ever learned, and I belong to an aged family tradition. So,
I'll tell you.
We have,
both Diva and I, have been thankfully privy through our high priest and priestess who trained us and elevated us, to every single page of Gardner's Book of Shadows that is held in Toronto by a witch couple. And there are margin notes, because back in his day, you were supposed to write it out by hand and copy it straight from your teachers. Now we have computers, we have printers, we have other ways. But at that time, they were still doing that, and he has liner notes saying they say that they don't do this anymore and things like that. Real oral stuff here. And, I mean, he was brutally honest. People just don't give him credit for that because it's not been published. And that's as it should be. But because some things really are sacred secrets, but very little needs be on the whole of it. What we're trying to do is not break our oaths of secrecy, but to show people the accessibility to magic. And we don't just rely on Gardner for our sources. We are worldwide. If it's legit, it's pagan, it's ancient, it's old, it's good, it works, we'll use it. But, yeah, I mean, it's clear from those liner notes that he was not writing this out of whole cloth. Mm-mm-mm. And, you know, we've got the book to prove it. But, yeah, I mean, it's amazing, and it's very telling. And I just don't, I can't fathom and I can't see that, you know, he was making it up and then doubling down and making liner notes saying they say they don't do this anymore. That's not rational.
I think it's a real insidious. Yeah, okay, let me put it this way. I had the dubious privilege of knowing and being in the coven of that initiated Aidan Kelly, who kind of started a lot of this, by claiming that it was all made up, that, you know, he got hold of, because he got initiated by my witch queen and high priest, who trusted him at the time, he got hold of the Gardnerian Book of Shadows, first degree, and, you know, was wanted to disprove it because he'd started his own tradition, Nrud, which is a great tradition, you know, very very cool reconstructions of ancient Greek rituals. But he wanted, like a lot of people do, you know, he wanted to prove that, hey, I can make it up from whole cloth and it's just as good as anybody else's. You know, I'm an individual. I don't have to subscribe to all this old tradition, you know. Kind of real American pioneering spirit, right? But it just wasn't true. Most of his criticisms were false and readily disproved by people who published at the time. But unfortunately, it played into a larger narrative in our culture of marginalizing witches and witchcraft. You know, I mean, you know, academics don't like witchcraft because we believe that magic is real. You know, we believe that gods are real. I mean, we don't believe that everything can
real.
Just
it's
be reduced to a test
tube. Science
that
you haven't figured out yet. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to jump in here, guys, and say that my experiences. And I grew up in the South, and my experiences have been radically different than yours.
And what?
You know, I have not had I've not had the negative encounters that I hear you guys alluding to, and I'm
okay.
You know, my experiences have been far more positive in in my being. I've lived a public pagan life for 25 years and have not had anyone actually, you know, give me any trouble. I mean, one person at work didn't like it, but she still worked with me.
I think they paint a dark glass half full darkly anyway. But what I'm saying is that there are challenges, but we get tons of mad respect. We have a billion fans.
I mean, there's challenges to walking any path that you truly believe, no matter what you call the divine. There's certainly challenges
live?
In a secular world. We all face challenges, and so.
Well, we've experienced people having crosses burned on their lawns for being witches here. You know, I mean. You know, I mean, it's it does depend on where you are. It's true,
yes.
But we constantly have people telling us about that. Well, and we've experienced it too. You know, prejudice from social workers who want to take away their kids because they're witches. You know, prejudice from landlords who kick them out as soon as they find out they've done a ritual in their room.
Prejudice
you know?
From employers. Prejudice from employers. Prejudice from judges. Just all kinds. It abounds still because, and I'm convinced of this, witches are a uniquely a go-to fodder for bad porn and terrible movies and bad books. And, you know, people seem to a lot want to believe in the worst. And that's kind of a human thing. And it's not just towards us. But certainly that persists. I don't see a lot of people trying to make movies about Islam, people that are Muslim, or people that are, you know, really devout Christians. But they do make a ton of movies, write a lot of stuff. About which, and that is a thing, and it can't be denied, and it shouldn't be.
But at the same time,
But I don't know that we need to wear it around our necks like an albatross either.
No one does. Certainly, we don't. You see what our work is. We don't wear it around like an albatross. But we're not going to deny that it exists, and we're not. And you know, we're going to oppose it. It's just unethical. It's wrong. It's a cheap thing, and we're not cheap. We're not
cheap
people.
But that does,
I do think the stuff that you're talking about over the last 20 years in particular has lessened to a certain extent. It is still out there, but it has lessened.
Yes,
and by the way, I live in the same mountain range that you do, but up in Pennsylvania, and I live in just as religious an area as you guys do. Things are still closed here on Sundays. There are Amish people are my neighbors. And so I live in a very controlled religious area, but that doesn't mean I don't live my life as a pagan. The people at work,
right? And we do
all too. I would have to do is go on Facebook, and they have my name, and it's my name on Facebook. And I got hired to a really good job just a year ago. People at work know I'm pagan. I came out to my boss and almost immediately and told him about it. So I think that some of those prejudices, those walls are breaking down.
Oh, yes, they absolutely are.
Yeah,
absolutely, they are. But it requires involvement is the thing. And, you know, pressing for your rights, demanding justice, you know, not allowing people to fire you wrongfully or a landlord to, you know, evict you. It does require that participation. And, yes, it is getting so much better, and we are part of that. We're part of that thrust, and we're proud of that.
Well, I think there have been a lot of people over the last started over 20 years ago as well in the local New Jersey community doing exactly what you're talking about. You know, I knew Charles Arnold, and as controversial a figure as he was, he certainly started that in Canada with, you know, getting holidays recognized on the calendar.
Right.
So I want to come in here with one more thought. I know we're running up toward the top of the hour. I'm sorry to interrupt. But one of the things that I have noticed for myself, and again, I speak from my own experience, is that, and I have taught this for a good 15 years, is that we create our own reality. And
we don't
how
believe
we,
that.
And how we interact and the energies that we put out, if I'm putting out empowered energy, then I'm going to receive empowerment back. If I put out, not to blame the victim necessarily, but if I put out, you know, woe is me kind of energy, I can't be surprised when the other shoe drops.
Well, we don't believe
that. If that's the thought that I'm putting out.
We don't believe that.
I agree, Passion, if I could jump in here.
You take
that. That's why I think we need to be, at this point, start being a little more proactive about our ethics. You know, that's why, I think instead of just, you know, talking about, we don't curse people, fine, we don't. But let's talk about our true, you know, deeper ethical tradition, what we do practice. We practice the power to know. We practice the power to will. You know, this is like what we teach prisoners, you know. Yes, fight the prejudice, but also model being a really ethical pagan, you know, being a powerful pagan.
But it's not just that. I mean, it's that also. But I mean, we need to, as pagans, particularly those of us that believe in magic, we need to be conscious of our very own thoughts.
Yes,
I don't
exactly.
Believe in
that's
that.
Where it starts.
I don't. I'm sorry. Well, I gotta step in here. I think that it's sad, but there is a true evil out there. And, you know, when it crosses our path, we're duty-bound to deal with it and not deny
it. We're not saying that we shouldn't deal with it, but what I'm talking about is like attracts like. This is one of the basic rules of magic. What you
but
put out comes
inviolate.
Back to you.
And there are other rules of magic that also come into play. And it's also about recognizing the dangers. It's also about, you know, being honest that they sometimes exist, not everywhere, not all the time, but they can be there. And do you have the skills to conquer that and to prevail? And that's what we're
absolutely
all
that's,
about.
That is part of you know,
that's
like attracts like, and knowing how to switch that and turn it to
yes.
something else.
Right.
Yeah, and that's where magic comes in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, guys, this has been fun.
Thank you.
I've enjoyed.
That
getting,
hour
I've,
just worry about.
Yeah. I mean, I always like it when I get a chance to talk with people that I don't necessarily fully agree with, and that we had a conversation without yelling and name calling.
That's
so
exactly.
Good.
Yeah.
There's no need for that.
Never.
So what I would like is. We're actually going to run long tonight as we wrap up. But if you could tell people again how to get in touch with you.
Yes, you can phone
ahead.
Us. We're in the phone book, have been for 25 years, under Dixie Dearman or D. Dearman in Asheville with two E's, North Carolina. You can contact us via email on our website, oldenworks.org.
Oldenwild.org
and Wiccans.org. We're org.
Yeah, they all lead the same place.
501c3 nonprofit, religious nonprofit. So we are a legitimate, just the same as any church or synagogue anywhere. Or
also have a Facebook page, Coven mm-hmm. Oldenwild, and that's easy to find too. So mm-hmm.
yeah. Thanks so
Excellent.
Much for having us. This was a great day.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Thank you. Now, Robin, would you tell our listeners, remind everybody how to get in touch with us?
Sure, absolutely. As you all know, that you can reach either Terry or myself at the littlestonebridge@gmail.com email address, or you can find us on Facebook at Little Stone Bridge Pathworkings Facebook page, and that is the best place to reach us if you want to reach out to us to get us to come to teach at your event, or you want to contact myself or Terry for any of the services we offer. I'm a certified holistic health coach. Terry is a spiritual counselor and has been for over 20 years. If anybody out there needs to know anything about the couples retreats that we do, or the drum workshops that we do, any of our teachings, you've listened to the teachings on the radio that we've done, the ritual, the tarot cards, and if you want something that's more in-depth, you contact us through that Facebook page, and we'll be more than happy to get you started. So just reach out to us there, or you can also find Terry at Rev Terry Power HP, or myself on Facebook, Robin A. McKean. And again, we'll be more than happy to speak with you.
All right. Well, thank you, darling. Let's see, a couple of programming notes. Want to remind everybody that this Sunday night is the second episode of the new show that we have launched with Alan Ritter and Christy Shepherd,
mm-hmm.
With An Emerging Forest, and they're going to have the episode coming up on this coming Sunday. And of course, we've got Voice of Olympus with Hercules Invictus and Athena Victory on Monday night.
Yay!
Tuesday night, the 24th, we're going to be talking about the language of inter and intrafaith dialogue. And then on the 26th, a week from tonight, Robin will be flying solo because I will be flying in an airplane, and she will be talking with Celia Farron, who's got some new music coming out. And then another quick reminder, on the 31st is our on-air in-bulk ritual. So tune in 5 nights a week here on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. So, again, thanks to our guests for being with us, Lady Passion and Diave. Glad you guys were here.
It was
Thank
a real
you.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
It was lovely.
Thanks, guys.
And,
blessed be.
And I believe that we are pushing right up against the top of the hour. Robin, did you have anything else you wanted to say before we...
I just want to remind everybody that coming up in June, the
weekend
of 9, 10, and 11, we will be at the Sumera Fest, which is going to be a Sumerian Wren Festival in New Jersey, given by Hands of Change. And Terry and I are actually on the planning committee for that as well. So if anybody has any ideas or if you'd like to be a vendor at the event, please contact one of us, probably me more likely, and let us know that you have a vending interest. Also, if you need more details about how to find that event, go to Hands of Change. You can Google that, and their website will come up. And you can contact the coven there and find out how to attend that event.
Yeah, that's going to be a blast. I'm looking forward to it. I get to play a Sumerian architect god. We're going to be dressed up in Sumerian garb and representing different gods and goddesses of the Sumerian
pantheon.
Mm-hmm. So
I just thank you guys for doing what you're doing. I think IPR is a great thing.
Thanks.
No, thank you.
I'm glad I live to see it.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, I believe that is about it, and it is simply time now to wish you all a week filled with love and with wonder. Good night, everyone, and blessed be.
Blessed be.
Blessed be.
Blessed be.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.
Now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app, look it in the mouth, get amazing services. Thank you.
Everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like GEICO is more than just a company that can save you money. GEICO also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.